Good morning. I'm Mark Allen with Gaper.io, and I'm here today with Elias Rubel, the CEO of MatterMade. Good morning, Elias.
It's still morning good morning, there, right? Mark. It yeah, morning, it's right? It's still morning here.
Yeah, I just Thanks did run up me. The East Coast, so it's I gotta always remember what time zone people are in. So to start with, can you share a brief background of yourself and your work experience?
Yeah, sure. I have kind of a non-traditional tech background. I guess the 2 minute version is started off building product in software. I built my first software company, it was acquired in 2014. My goal there was basically, I didn't have a background in any of this. I didn't go to an Ivy League school. I actually dropped out of art school. And so I knew I had kind of a lot against me in that sense. And so I picked the least sexy category I could just to kick my foot in the door. I was like, you know, pick the thing that all the other young people aren't trying to solve. And then, you know, you can do whatever you want after that if you get any kind of success. So that's what I did, raised venture capital, went to the, after they acquired us, was the VP of products at the acquiring company for a little while, ran 5 enterprise product lines. And then spent about a year and a half trying to figure out what I wanted to do with my life after that. Rode my motorcycle around for a while through Central America. And landed in San Francisco, and I hadn't solved anything. I thought I'd have great clarity and knew what I know what I'd want to do when I grew up, and I didn't. So our lead investors sent me around to different portfolio companies to help with growth. Mm-hmm. So I did some of these interim VP of marketing, VP of growth stints, all for like seed Series A companies, and I discovered this chicken and egg problem, which was companies could either afford to hire someone like me to come in at a senior level and, you know, help dictate, you know, here's the go-to-market motion. Here's some of the things that the early scaffolding we need to get set up so we avoid common pitfalls down the road. Or they could afford junior talent to go actually execute. But it was always this chicken and egg of like senior strategy or junior execution. And most of the time at that stage, you know, early Series A, there wasn't a ton of budget for both.
Right.
And so that's really how MatterMade was born. I missed having my own team, saw this problem and was like, hey, you know what? Maybe I'll just do this for a little while, have some fun with it and move on. And turns out it's a lot of fun. And there was a tremendous need. So MatterMade is what I'm doing today. It's my agency. Although I hate to call it an agency, we're really like a hybrid between consulting and doing work. It's marketing org in a box. So I hired my 10 favorite marketers, all B2B. And we rove around Silicon Valley and now all over the place. We have international companies that work with us as well. And we act as either an extension of their existing B2B marketing org, or in some cases for earlier companies, we are their entire marketing org from senior leadership all the way through to execution. And then in our enterprise use case, companies like Dropbox and Calm use us for some of their B2B go-to-market motions within an already existing much larger marketing org.
And when you say Calm, are you talking about the company, the meditation company, that Calm?
Exactly, yeah.
Yes, I've actually, I have tried their product.
So yeah, it's a great product. No, we love it.
You did a good job.
We can't take credit for any of that.
Okay. So what has been your experience with remote employment since sounds like you've traveled all over the country. So, and now you're in Colorado. So what's been your experience?
Yeah. I mean, and not only that, but I split my time right between Denver and San Francisco, or at least pre-COVID I did. And so, I think we were really fortunate as a business. MatterMade was almost always distributed, right? We always had employees in all different states. Sometimes we work with freelancers all around the world for certain kind of niche needs, but our core kind of in-house team has always been distributed. And I think for us, that's been a strategic advantage because there, and this was actually my thesis going into MatterMade, there are a lot of people in the Bay who have a ton of experience. They've gone through a number of cycles, you know, the venture cycles, acquisition cycles, and they're tired. And the Bay is, you know, in some ways of doing it, it can be a really beautiful, easy place to live, but in other ways of doing it, depending on your luck, like it can be a harder place to exist for a long time. And so my thesis was that there are a number of these highly experienced, successful people who are ready to leave the Bay. And maybe leave the Bay means going to Tahoe, right? Or, mm-hmm. or Marin. Like it doesn't mean, you know, leave. But other people are like, hey, I want to go to Park City, or I want to go to Boise, Idaho. And so I sought out to find those super talented marketers who were excited by the prospect of not having to, you know, commute on BART anymore. And that's how I built the team. So it's been interesting going into COVID because we were already basically built for this. I'd say the challenge that's presented itself is that, you know, you can't replace in-person mm-hmm. collaboration fully. You can, and I think that the soft piece of that that you can't replace is some level of bonding, right? Like you can only get so close to a team before you need to like book the cool cabin or the beach retreat. Yeah. And, you know, not that I'm condoning getting drunk with people, but like, you know, have some drinks or whatever it is that you would like to relax, meditate together. It could be anything.
Whatever.
So yeah, that's been the interesting thing for me lately is figuring out, you know, how do we have experiences together like that, that can bring the team even closer together without physically, you know, endangering anyone because right. of travel.
Yeah. I think that's been the biggest challenge since COVID hit is that particular thing. A lot of the technical part, I think a lot of people have solved. So.
Yeah, absolutely.
And on your note about people leaving San Francisco, being where I live a half hour south of San Francisco, and housing prices have gone up because people are leaving the city, but they still want to stay in the Bay Area.
Totally. Oh, yeah. Well, and not to mention, you have such better weather down there.
So. Yeah, it's going to be 72 and sunny today, I think, which is pretty nice for November. I know I've talked to friends back east and they got snow recently. So.
Yep. Ours just melted.
Yeah. Well, but your area, that's what they do. I mean, that's one of the reasons you go there.
That's true.
Right. So what do you think is what do you think is the future of remote employment, and what do you think can be done differently to make it more effective?
I mean, the groundswell is already happening. The train has left the station. And not just in the like, oh man, employers are going to have a hard time reeling their people back in. I don't think that's the case. I think that might've been the conversation initially. Now the conversation is, oh shit, you mean I don't need to have this, you know, $10,000, $20,000, $100,000 a month office space anymore. Mm-hmm. And my teams are still collaborating. Huh, like head scratcher, you know, mm-hmm. and certain pieces of organizations still need to get together, right? Like sales still needs to have, you know, their SKOs probably need to happen in person in a perfect world, and company retreats, like the things I already mentioned. But I think that this has been a forced proving ground mm-hmm. for the, certainly I'll just speak for tech, since that's what I am exposed to, but like for tech to say, hey, like we can actually do this. Mm. And it set a new precedent. So,
I don't think we're
going to go back.
I think we're going to go back to some type of hybrid model. And I think the WeWorks and companies like that are going to have more demand because people aren't going to want the dedicated office. They're going to want the shared office. Would you agree?
I agree for sure. I think WeWork will have to scratch its way out of the grave. It'll probably be a different company that's servicing that demand by the time it's safe to go into co-working spaces, and by the time it's socially acceptable and companies start opening up stipends for people to go back to the office in that capacity. I would suspect WeWork isn't leading that charge. And I would hope that there are a lot of entrepreneurs out there right now in their own communities seeing that trend and thinking that they could have, you know, like a less giant corporate version of WeWork, right? Like a local version. I think some of the best innovation and collaboration and community in tech comes from these kind of community hubs, people rubbing elbows, drinking coffee together, jamming on their projects and trading notes. And I think that is, at least in all the WeWorks I worked in, it was very sterile and surprisingly, like people didn't really interact a whole ton. Mm-hmm. And there are exceptions. I've met some of my best working friends at WeWorks, but compare that to, you know, when I started my first company, we were in Portland and there was this place, still is, although a very different version now, called the Portland Incubator Experiment, mm-hmm. PIE. And it was in Wieden Kennedy. They kind of gave the space to the community initiative. And I mean, that was the epicenter of innovation in Portland. It was so high energy and collaborative and supportive. And I think coming out of something like COVID, that's what we're going to need. Yeah. And hopefully that's what we'll see.
Yeah, I think so too. And just out of curiosity, does MatterMade have an office in San Francisco or in Colorado, or just you're 100% distributed?
Technically we do. or technically we did. So we had an office in San Francisco. We had an office in Denver, both of which I've given up because I would never encourage anyone to go into the office these days. Mm-hmm. And B, therefore, it just doesn't make any sense to sit on that because we don't need a mailing address. Right? Like that's not 600 California sounds nice, but I think nobody really cares.
Right.
So for now, no office.
And that is a nice neighborhood. I've been down there. So,
yeah.
Right. So did COVID cause that or did you do that ahead of COVID?
COVID caused that.
Yeah.
We did have offices so that people could come together and collab. Like I said, I was flying into San Francisco back and forth between Denver and San Francisco enough that I needed to still have an office in the city and a place to meet with people. And in Denver, we had enough folks here that it made sense to, you know, hold an office space where we could get together, you know, once, twice a week. But now, I mean, it just doesn't make sense anymore.
Yeah, no, I'm talking to a lot of CEOs at Twitter, Jack Dorsey, that, right? And that's a pretty big office building and, you know, big office space in San Francisco that is going to be empty for a while, it looks like.
Dropbox too, same thing.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of them. Even Facebook is remote now. And if you've been down East Menlo Park, what they built there, it's like, what's going to happen with all that? So what is the story behind MatterMade? You've touched on it a little bit, but I mean, who is your typical customer and what services do you offer them?
Yeah, no, great question. So MatterMade today exists in really two different, we have two ICPs. The first is you're a early stage startup. You just raised your Series A, or you're about to raise your Series A, but really you just raised your Series A. Maybe you haven't even announced it yet. And suddenly your business has gone from kind of scratching to get to product market fit, prove out some early viability to great. Now we're building out our sales org and we have these new board directed goals. And we now are being told by this great new VP of sales that we have that if this individual, he or she, is going to hire, you know, 4 to 5 AEs and a BDR team, SDR team over the next 6 to 12 months, we're going to need to have some sort of marketing muscle built up to support that. Right. And so this is the first time they've really thought about it in that capacity or had the budget to pull the trigger on it in some capacity. So on the early stage side, that's where we play. We come in, we really help them identify, you know, ICP, buyer personas, making sure that the funnel doesn't have a bunch of leaks in it, which it always does. Mm-hmm. Making sure the handoff between marketing and sales, that's often overlooked in the early stages and not until you get some kind of senior brass later in the game, is that fixed? So we try to set a foundation there of collaboration and like everyone being on the same team rather than being siloed in the early times. So that's kind of our first core ICP. And then our other core ICP are larger companies, right? I mentioned Dropbox and Calm both being customers of ours. And so in those cases, they already have a huge marketing team, right? You know, in Dropbox's case, they may have more than 300 marketers within that company. But, you know, it becomes harder the larger these organizations get to sometimes move as quickly as they'd want to or to, you know, look at certain elements of the business with just like fresh eyes, right? Everybody's been sprinting on the same quarterly goals. They're all aligned, which means there's white space that's ignored inherently, right? It's not anyone's fault. It doesn't mean they're not doing a fantastic job. And so we're brought in by these larger organizations to explore that white space and to sprint really quickly, like this rogue, call it like a SWAT team of marketers that can come in and find some of these like smaller blind spots. But in these giant organizations, a smaller blind spot might drive tens or hundreds of millions in revenue you know, in a short period of time. Mm-hmm. So that's really our use case for large enterprises.
Yeah. So you kind of give them that startup capability, you know, that the ability to be agile, but because I've worked with large companies and to get anything done, you meeting after meeting after, you got to get this person, right? But, and that's one of the advantages of being in a startup is like, you could literally turn on a dime on a Friday.
Totally. Yeah. Exactly.
Ah, cool. So the ongoing pandemic forced everybody to go remote in March, and obviously it had an effect on you. But did that cause any challenges that you didn't quite expect, or were you pretty much prepared?
You know, honestly, this, like I said, this is my first time in services. I'd been in product all before that. Right. So I wasn't used to having to forecast if this happens, then that, like, it just wasn't something that I was paying a ton of attention to. And certainly I don't think many of us were forecasting a global pandemic. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the first budget that gets cut when bootstraps are tightened and teams are laying people off is marketing, right? They're like, all right, batten down the hatches. Mm-hmm. And I think, especially in this case, because it was such an unknown, that just people's budgets froze overnight. So that was, I mean, certainly the beginning, just speaking candidly, the beginning of last year was a really interesting time for us. I mean, we were just like, okay, let's weather this. Mm-hmm. And wait, you know, all the investors were telling all of their startups, like, stop spending on marketing, just wait a couple of months, see what happens, right? And mm-hmm. so just overnight, that was a big shift for us in our portfolio mix. Thankfully, larger companies, you know, have the ability to plan on a longer time horizon. Mm-hmm. And now, you know, as everyone kind of learned together, you can't just, if you shut off marketing, you're also shutting off, in many cases or most cases, demand. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, another way that we saw this kind of play out is some companies were brave and willing to spend during that time, and they were competing in a very, you know, low competition environment because so many other people had shut off their budgets. So the cost to acquire went way down. Mm-hmm. And so they had this amazing advantage as long as they were willing to take some risk there, and it paid off. So now going into Q4, even Q3, we've just seen this tremendous, like, the faucet is not only turned on, but like while it was off, they replaced the, you know, the size of the faucet with a high flow faucet. I mean, budgets are just insane right now because everyone is used to what this is,
right,
in some capacity. And now they're trying to play catch up, or take advantage of, you know, this realization that we're going to be in some version of this for a while. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's interesting.
So yeah, so short term, but long term, it sounds like you've weathered it and you're going to be okay.
Oh, totally. We've never, our pipeline has never been as full as it is today, with people, you know, hey, can you start yesterday kind of conversations. And so now it's putting strain on us to scale the team in a way that we were already growing, but this is it's a whole new beating down of the doors.
It's the good problem to have.
Yes, I'll take it.
Yes, it beats the other one. So finally, there's companies like Gaper that help develop, build, and scale products. So how important do you think that's going to be going forward for companies like yourself and companies that you service, that they need to get, they have the same problem. They need to scale quickly in the IT department, but they don't have the resources to vet and really hire all these people.
Yeah, I mean, I think naturally there's going to be a surge in demand for that type of service, right? Like we're not a product organization, so we don't personally have need for a product like that. But all of the companies building software, I think there was a little bit of a stigma of going overseas or even, you know, onshoring, where, you know, the culture of the team and the engineering organization. But I think much like how, you know, co-working spaces and being remote are now becoming much more the norm, we're going to see that folks are much more comfortable with on and offshoring and outsourcing to developer talent, engineering talent.
Yeah, I think especially for if you're a technology company, you're probably going to keep your technology close, you know, your actual core product, but everything else, you can offshore that.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I have this, kind of, I don't know if it's a rant or a soapbox or something that I get up on. And especially at early stage companies, there's just so much risk, right? Mm-hmm. We all know that. There's risk on the idea. There's risk on changes in the market. There's risk on marketing, product, sales, like all of these organizations that you need to spin up introduce risk. And I think we're heading towards a direction where VCs now are really pushing their companies to figure out, and this is going to sound like a non-statement, but like, how do we mitigate as much risk as possible? Well, if you're assembling from scratch a team of individuals who have never worked together before, whether it's in marketing, sales, product, there is inherent risk just in the team not gelling, those being the wrong hires. Mm-hmm. And so I think in the earlier stages, we're going to see a continued push towards using some outsourced resources that are already vetted, that are already proven, that already have built trust with the VCs, so that the focus can be more on, are we in the right market? Have we evolved the product in the right way? Not in the execution of, did we stand up the right scaffolding in marketing, or are the engineers pushing clean code, or, you know, are the sales leaders and, you know, individuals being trained in best practices and standard kind of way of operating. Mm-hmm. And then once that's been proven out and you're entering the scale phase, then of course you bring all of this talent in-house and you hire the best people and you scale those organizations. But I do think that we're going to see more of this push to de-risk.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree. I mean, I actually did a podcast about a month ago with a company, two guys, two co-founders, and they just outsource every aspect. They just manage it all. And they're doing well.
I'm curious now. So what is your ICP? Are you focused mostly on earlier stage, you know, a gal and a guy in a garage, or is it?
No, it would be the next level up.
Okay.
I mean, we do have some, I mean, our largest customer is actually a bank in overseas. So that's an enterprise customer, but it's more the, okay, we've got the product going. Now we need to really build the product. You know, now we need to do it as a professional. We're past prototype and proof of concept.
Take the duct tape off, undo the Elmer's glue, get out the TIG welder.
Yeah. We got to get off of WordPress if we got to build an actual website. And nothing against WordPress, but you know what I mean?
Yeah, sure.
I actually build WordPress sites. They're actually quite good for what they do. So, well, Elias, I want to thank you for your time today. It's been fascinating. Hope maybe when you come back to San Francisco, we can get together for a beer or something.
Mark, I'm all about getting together over beers. It's the best format of work meeting.
Yeah. Do you live near 21st Century or 21st Amendment?
I used to. So, well, I was in the Marina and Castro. I lived all over the place when we were in the city. But that's a good spot. I wish they changed the recipe on their famous watermelon beer and made it too sweet. So if anyone from 21st Amendment is listening to your podcast, go back to the old recipe. It was better. But you know, towards you, actually, my favorite brewery is Bear Bottle.
Where's that?
It is, oh gosh. It is at the bottom of, I'm spacing the name of the neighborhood. I'll have to follow up with a link so you can check it out. But they make amazing, like New England style IPAs. Ooh. And they bring in these garage brewers who, you know, they'll like crowdsource the recipe and have a competition. Ooh. The level of innovation there in the beer scene is really, really spectacular.
You said Bear, B-E-A-R?
B-A-R-E, Bear Bottle.
Okay, cool.
Definitely worth a visit.
All right, I'll check it out.
All right, Mark.
Have a great day.
Thanks for having me on the show.
All right, bye.